This is because everything in existence is moving. In fact, even massive hard materials, such as a piece of iron, which we think is solid and not moving on the inside, has been scientifically proven to not be solid. It is porous and has lacunas inside, with atoms in uninterrupted constant motion. Within a piece of iron are atoms moving freely in a vacuum, while apparently it is a solid block. Movement of objects is what generates zonal characters. Inside all objects, from the smallest to the largest objects on the horizon, like galaxies, suns, planets, and clouds, there are atoms that are moving and making sounds. Furthermore, the entire celestial body with its atoms is moving and making sounds. This, as we say, is based on the rule that every moving object makes sounds. Some sounds have a frequency beyond the audible range. There are moving objects that make inaudible ultrasonic sounds, and there are also moving objects that make infrasonic sounds. The sounds we specified in the inscriptional characters represent just a tiny section between inaudible ultrasonic sounds and infrasonic sounds. Within this tiny section there are unscripted sounds as well, for example in the word Nima. We, the Arabic speakers, do not have a specified character for the sound Jna, except that we somehow endeavor to transcribe it. Therefore the sonal characters are immeasurable when compared to the inscriptional characters. Furthermore, the ideational characters are greater in number than the sonal characters. Ideational characters are almost incalculable, almost unlimited. Still they cannot be unlimited since ideation is limited. Earlier we discussed the limitation of ideation, and how it comes to a standstill at the state of singularity. The fact that there is a state at which ideation comes to a standstill, indicates that ideational characters are limited, but they are the closest thing to the absolute. They are broad enough to approach, to border, or to adjoin the absolute. Sonal characters are the ones in the universe outside of the human, while the ideational characters are the ones in the universe within the human. They represent the free movement of thoughts. Thoughts accompany the fluctuation of the mind from side to side. The mind, as we said, is the faculty of our binary perception. Also, we discussed the binary perception and the singular perception. Fluctuation of the mind from side to side enables it to distinguish perceptions. This fluctuation is thought. It is ideational characters. Speaking of the outer universe and the inner universe, a Gnostic addressed a human, saying, "You think yourself a small being while in you is folded the greatest universe." As if he says, "O little human, know that this great universe is folded within you." It is known that all that exists outside of the human, also exists within the human. This is despite the fact that the outer universe is too big to imagine. With our naked eyes we see the celestial bodies, the suns, and the galaxies and think as did our ancestors, that this is the entire universe. Whenever a new telescope is invented, we discover new celestial bodies, and new galaxies. And the more we become amazed at the reality of the grandeur of our external universe. Every time we discover new galaxies, we think that this universe is infinite. This is because of the means available to us, to know the dimensions of the universe and its expansion. This entire universe exists inside the human. We mentioned the divine saying, "I created the universe for man, and man I created for myself." Also we said that, the universes are the vehicles of man, whereas man is God's vehicle. This was alluded to in a related divine saying, "My heavens and earth do not contain me, yet the heart of my believing servant does." Also the Quran emphatically declares to the signs within the self, the internal universe, while referring to the signs covering the horizons, "We shall show them our signs on the horizons, and within themselves, until it will be shown to them that it is the truth." Does not your Lord suffice, since he is witness over all things? This means that the Lord manifests himself through his creations, in order for our minds to recognize him. What is manifested in his creations is that every creation has a creator. From its inception, the mind has told us from experience and practice that never fails, that no product is produced without a producer. Never, in our life experience nor in the experience of our ancestors, or in our written and unwritten history, has a thing produced itself. The universe is visible. Experience tells us that the podium before us is made by a carpenter, as everything about it is indicative of its producer. So rationally, the universe has a producer. Earlier we mentioned that simple Bedouin when asked, "What tells you of the existence of God?" He replied, "The dung is indicative of the camel." This means if he sees camel dung, while he treks through the desert, it comes to his mind vividly that a camel has passed by the area, or there is a camel, whether nearby or far away. The dung is indicative of its existence. He said, "The dung is indicative of the camel." That is to say, the product is indicative of the producer. The Lord says, "We shall show them our signs on the horizons, and within themselves." Percepts indicate an internal power with which we perceive. It is the perceptual power. This perceptual power expands, strengthens, becomes grandiose, and keeps growing until one becomes cognizant of God. The novices in piety know God by his creations. But Gnostics know the creations of God, by their Creator. So, allusions in the verse go like this: "We shall show them our signs on the horizons," the initial knowledge, "and within themselves," the advanced knowledge. We vacillate in this manner, between the outward and the inward, the exoteric and the esoteric, until we know God, until it will be shown to them that it is the truth. Some reprehension can be noticed at the last part of the verse: "Does not your Lord suffice, since he is witness over all things?" As if to say, why shouldn't you know the creation by the Creator, instead of knowing the Creator by the creations? Does not your Lord suffice, since he is witness over all things? In a particular state of gnosis, the creations veil the Creator, so by the Creator the creations are known. In this way, God is known by his emanation from within ourselves, by the disappearance of the veils between us and him. These are the veils of ignorance, fear, illusion, myth, and bad habit. Thus the Quran says, "No, but that which they have earned is oval in their hearts." The word oval in means to cover. Nothing blocks the pre-eternal truth enshrined in our hearts, which is God, from being reflected by our minds except for the vanities between him and us. These are nothing but creations. The major vanity is the ego, followed by the other creations. If we can lift these veils between God and us, we will not need to seek to know him by the external universe. However, there is no way to lift the veils between God and us, except by reflecting and by discipline. We gain this discipline when we move between the inside and the outside, to correlate our knowledge of the external universe with that of the internal universe. Eventually our minds are sharpened by devotion, discipline, and rectification. They become neutral, until they are liberated from our egos and carry out God's command. Then they become satisfied with God, and follow him with obedience, compliance, and submission. When we reach all these levels, we will not seek to know God by his creations, rather we will seek to know the creations by the Creator. Does not your Lord suffice, since he is witness over all things? To Gnostics the greatest universe is the human. A Gnostic addressed the human saying, "You think yourself a small being while in you is folded the greatest universe." Here, he referred to the universes, and he pointed to the Creator beyond the universes. The greatest of all is God. And if God is within us, then how is it that we are small? This is what he meant to say. To Gnostics the greatest universe is not but on the horizons, rather it is the human. This greatness is of course, not spatial, rather as pertaining to the worthiness of the creation. The human is the greatest creation in the universe. Here the concept of ideational characters can be clearly explained by an earlier point. Ideational characters are immeasurable when compared to sonal characters. On the other hand, sonal characters are immeasurable when compared to inscriptional characters, yet they are also limited. Sonal characters are immeasurably greater than inscriptional characters, but are also limited. The difference between them and inscriptional characters is immeasurable. However, ideational characters are almost unlimited. They, as we said, are limited but adjoin the infinite. In this sense, they are immeasurably greater than the sonal characters. The Quran is not the Arabic language. The Quran is God's essence lowered to levels close to us, and coalesced in the implements of the Arabic language, so that we may understand. We proceed to say that people who think the Arabic language can assign meanings to the Quran, are in fact deeply obscured from the Quran. Arabic gives only the superficial meaning of the Quran. It gives the interpretation of the Quran, which is the wrapping seal, as we once called it. The Quran has seven seals. The wrapping can be unsealed by the Arabic language. The person capable of interpreting the Quran must attend to many different types of knowledge: accurate knowledge of the Arabic language, knowledge of Arab conventionalities, and knowledge of the days of the Arabs, including their history, their wars, their tales, and the idiomatic language they express in Arabic. The interpreter must be familiar with all this, to be able to interpret the Quran. Then, after all this knowledge, the depth of interpretation will not pass the wrapping seal, will not pass further than the crust of the Quran. Inside the crust are seven layers, and within each layer there are seven layers, unending. This is because Arabic gives us just the tip of the Quran, which ends with God. The Quran is God's essence. Let us once again read the verse, Hameem. The Arabic letters H and M. I swear by the book that makes things clear, surely we have made it a Quran in Arabic, that you may understand. And surely it, this Quran, in the mother of the book is with us, is truly elevated, full of wisdom. The ta'ens are explicitly indicated in the line, surely we have made it a Quran in Arabic, on earth in the land of the Arabs. When revealed, the Quran came out in Arabic in its current form. It is, of course, intended for the whole world, but it was revealed in the Arabic language to the Arabs through an Arab prophet, so that we the Arabic speakers may understand. But the Quran, in the mother of the book with the divine essence, is ineffable. Remember, it is the essence of God. Even when it states as, truly elevated, full of wisdom, it is only a statement, the allusion is in HM. HM has no meaning because they are characters. Characters are specifications of sounds caused by movement, which is unknown. This movement progresses from specification towards the absolute. Arabic, in fact, originated from daily practices to meet the needs of the living body. The language was not developed for connotations. It evolved through time from coarseness to delicateness to accommodate concepts, allusions, and fine thoughts that agitate in the human psyche. It should be clear that the language is totally incapable of conveying the true meanings of the Quran. In fact, we cannot even get the full meaning of any word, except by certain practices, from which we can understand the intended meaning. This can be clearly explained by an illustration. The word camel conveys to the listener in the Kibbabish semi-desert, a meaning, which is completely different for the meaning that comes to the listener in Khartoum. The word camel may not convey any meaning to a child in the upscale neighborhood of Alim Tidad in Khartoum, or perhaps may convey to him a single image of a camel walking with firewood. And perhaps he may not have seen this image in Alim Tidad of Khartoum, maybe he saw it in another place. But anyway, let's assume that a child from Khartoum saw the camel with the firewood. Once he hears the word camel, a single image rises in his mind, of a camel walking with swinging gait carrying firewood. A similar child in the Kibbabish semi-desert has a different experience when he hears the word camel. It conveys to him numerous images, colors, and sizes of camels. That is because his living practice is in an environment full of camels, while the living practice of the other child is in an environment where he rarely sees camels. This is the reality of language. Meaning changes along with daily practice. Language becomes adequate by our living practice. Meanings, which enter our minds when we hear a word, come from our living practice. Here it should be clear that the meanings of the Quran come from the practice of worship. Arabic words are just allusions to meanings revealed in our minds through the practice of living and worship. Language is not only incapable of conveying the true meanings of the Quran, it also makes the Quran inaccessible. People who these days give so much attention to the Arabic language, if they knew the truth about the language, knew that the Arabic language of the Quran is not of real value, and it may be a barrier, they will relieve themselves of a lot of effort, and at the same time, people will be relieved of a lot of reading, and a lot of listening material. Thus, people will not overlook the reality of what is required of them, which is to take the meanings of the Quran from monism, from their practice of living and worship. The value of Arabic is in referring to the meanings, but meanings are formed in the implements of language, from practices of worship and monism. The meaning of the Quran is taken directly from God. This takes us to the end of our fourth episode. God willing, our fifth episode will be devoted to the Quran and the veil of language.